Hello, this is Joan with the Bloomington Normal Pantograph, dated Thursday, October 11th, 2018. We will begin today's reading with the article headlined, Ripple for Change, Crossroads Marks 30 Years of Fair Trade on Main Street, by Maria Nagel. Bloomington. 30 years ago, Charlene Watts and Marilyn Tanley had a vision to try easing human suffering. They co-founded Crossroads Handicrafts of the World in downtown Bloomington in hopes of creating a ripple for change by assuring artisans in impoverished areas they'd get a fair return for their labor. In other words, it would be a fair trade shop. Watts, 84, and Townley, 88, are among 60 volunteers who continue to operate the outlet for fair trade merchandise. Both now reside at the Westminster Village Retirement Community in Bloomington. Crossroads' varied merchandise includes chocolate bars with cocoa from Ghana, produced with no child labor, clothing and bags made in India by women rescued from sex trafficking, handmade jewelry from Kenya that allows women to reinvest in themselves, and intricately carved metal wall hangings from Haiti, made with discarded oil drums. The nonprofit volunteer-staffed shop will celebrate 30 years of providing fair trade on Main Street throughout the month of October, which is also Fair Trade Month. Its major celebration from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. Saturday will feature events inside the store and at outdoor temporary parklets in front and on the side of the building at 428 North Main Street. I think we have beautiful handmade crafts, and I think people do want to know that when they buy something, it's been made by people who enjoyed doing it, said Townley. She has visited participating artisans in Indonesia, India, and the Philippines, and was pleased to see they had very good working conditions, Townley said. We are a way of empowering a lot of artisans in impoverished areas and showing the world that you can value people and our planet and still have a profitable business, said Watts. The most important thing for people to know is we're not a charity, she added. Our overriding purpose is to transform the way retail business is done so it values people and the planet. The store embodies what business schools call social enterprise, said Watts. Social enterprise is a business, but it has a higher purpose for the common good, she explained. Store manager Donna Brie, who works part-time, is Crossroads' only paid employee. Its first manager, Carol Schrantz, supervised the store for 14 years unpaid. The two store founders' passion about fair trade helped garner enough enthusiasm from the community through volunteers to get Crossroads up and running and keep it going, said Brie. For 30 years, to have volunteers keep this shop open says an awful lot about the commitment from the community, added Pat Fitzgerald, a volunteer who coordinates the volunteers. Many of our volunteers have been here for 15 to 25 years. They are interested in helping other people who don't have the opportunities that we have, said Brie. It's a way for us to be able to support our brothers and sisters across the world. Before moving to its current location in 1995, Crossroads occupied the former Western Union storefront, which also was in the 400 block of North Main Street. On Saturday, Crossroads and several neighboring businesses will have sidewalk sales. Bob's Bay, 419 North Main Street, is hosting the band Pork Bellies, so there will be live music for the event. Ivy Lane Bakery, 405 North Main Street, will have a pop-up bakery inside Crossroads. Night Shop, 517 North Main Street, will have a tent to offer breakfast specialties. Reality Bites will serve lunch in the parklets. Mimosas and margaritas will also be offered on the patio in front of Reality Bites, 414 North Main Street. T-shirts featuring Jambu, an elephant that graphic artist Doug DeLong painted on the side of the store in recognition of the store's international outreach in India and a lot of the countries in Africa, will be for sale. There will be a selfie station set up so people can have their picture taken with Jambu. Face painting, henna tattoos, and an elephant scavenger hunt will take place inside the store. The West Bloomington Book Bicycle will also be participating. The celebration continues on October 29th with activities planned from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m., including Jambu cake, treats, in-store sales, and a drawing for the winner of a $30 gift certificate. Mata Trader from Chicago will display some of its dresses. Wine and cheese will be served during the trunk show. And a sidebar tells us, if you go, what? Crossroads nonprofit store celebrating 30 years of fair trade on Main Street. When? 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. Saturday. Where? Inside the store at 428 North Main Street, Bloomington, and outside in temporary parklets set up in front and on the side of the building. Activities, Jambu t-shirts and selfies, elephant scavenger hunt, sidewalk sales, live music, and breakfast and lunch cafes by Ivy Lane Bakery, Night Shop, and Reality Bites. The next article is entitled, State House Candidates Brady Webb Spar on Education Spending, by Derek Bay. Normal. Despite frequent disagreements, State House candidates Dan Brady and Ben Webb came together on one important thing Wednesday. Their race shouldn't be about partisan politics. "We can differ on policy, and we do," said Brady, a Republican state representative who served the area for nearly 20 years. "But my constituent service, my dedication to the people of the 105th District, and my ability to work on their behalf in Springfield and back in the district is unmatched. I'm pleased to have run a campaign without any intervention for the party establishment," said Webb, a Democrat and first-time candidate. "I entered the race to ensure that voters have a choice this midterm and a choice for change. I think I'm the right candidate." Brady and Webb generally towed the party line, but backed it up with their own perspectives and experiences during an hour-long debate at Illinois State University's University Galleries in Normal. Brady said frequently the state has a limited role in fixing problems, including health care and renewable energy, given its ongoing budget problems, while Webb referred often to the possibilities of a progressive income tax, which could pay for programs by charging higher rates to those who make more. "I think people should stop and ask themselves, what am I going to pay more money for through a progressive income tax? I happen to believe, before you ask me for more, you show me what you can do with what you have," said Brady. "Priorities of the state should be public education, public infrastructure, and public safety. We have to get back to those priorities. We can get a $2 billion revenue boost just by asking the wealthy to pay their fair share. We have one of the most regressive state and local tax systems in the United States," said Webb. "We need to find new ways to bring more money into the state. Closing loopholes, legalizing marijuana." Webb, a university high school teacher, hit Brady for his votes on higher education funding. While Brady defended his record and said, Webb doesn't understand the compromises necessary to succeed in Springfield. "I understand that you're working hard, but I want to see more. I understand it's not easy being in the minority party," said Webb. "A student should be able to go to an Illinois university debt-free." "I've done everything I can," said Brady, a partner and funeral director at Kibler Brady Rustman Memorial Home in Bloomington. "I worked very diligently to make sure that Illinois State University had a fair appropriation." Both candidates said they'd like to see more fair funding for universities, increased apprenticeship programs, more money for pensions, and a new infrastructure plan. Both oppose a county-level motor fuel tax, a proposal favored by McLean County officials. The next local news story is entitled, Sorensen Returns to Bloomington Normal. Ex-McLean County Board Chair Finishes Federal Sentence, by Edith Brady Lunny. Bloomington. After about 10 months in federal prison, former McLean County Board Chairman Matt Sorensen has completed his sentence on wire fraud charges. Sorensen was sentenced last year to a year and a day in prison related to consulting work he performed for State Farm. He was required to serve 85% of the sentence. Sorensen, 52, left the federal prison in Marion in mid-September for a halfway house in Chicago to begin his transition back into the community. In addition to the time in prison, Sorensen must complete a year of supervised release, formerly known as parole. He has returned to the Twin Cities. In his plea agreement with federal prosecutors, Sorensen admitted he participated with Navdeep Arora, a director at McKinsey & Company, in a scheme that cost State Farm about $500,000. The pair submitted false invoices to McKinsey, a Chicago-based consulting firm, for work that was never performed for the Bloomington Insurance Company. Arora was sentenced to 2 years in March for his role in the scheme. Both men were held equally responsible for $490,474 in restitution to McKinsey. State Farm was reimbursed $1.4 million by McKinsey. Arora paid $586,000 in restitution in early 2018. The federal indictments followed a lengthy investigation into how the two men obtained hundreds of thousands of dollars through fraudulent transactions. Arora billed State Farm for extensive personal travel, including trips to domestic and foreign locations. At his sentencing hearing in September 2017, Sorensen apologized for his misconduct that he acknowledged was at odds with a lifetime of public service. During his county board tenure, Sorensen was a driving force behind the movement to improve community mental health services in McLean County. The next story is entitled, Dividing Downtown Zoning Pitched, by Maria Nagel. Bloomington. A consultant helping with a comprehensive overhaul of Bloomington's zoning ordinance pitched the case Wednesday for carving the city's 26-block Central Business District into three smaller zoning districts. The downtown right now is B3, everything. It's a huge area. In fact, Chicago's Magnificent Mile could fit in your B3 district, said consultant John Housiel at a public open house Wednesday at City Hall. He was referring to the upscale section of Michigan Avenue that runs between the Chicago River and Lakeshore Drive. Housiel's Chicago-based firm, Housiel Levine Associates, was hired by the city in 2016 to help draft the code revision governing the types of businesses and structures that can be located in different parts of the city. The Bloomington Planning Commission will have a public hearing on the proposal at 4 p.m. October 24th at City Hall. The council could vote on the measure November 26th. The revision was prompted by the city's 2015 comprehensive plan, which outlined a thriving downtown environment as one of its goals. Housiel has suggested a core downtown district of 5 to 7 blocks, another district with transitional areas surrounding the core downtown district, and a third warehouse and arts district at the south end of town, arguing it's easier to redevelop compact, energetic, and walkable downtowns. The smaller core downtown district, promoting shopping and entertainment with dining on the first floors and residential spaces on the upper floors, would make the area more vital, dynamic, and interesting to pedestrians, said Housiel. That core area needs to hold true to commercial spaces, studios, restaurants, galleries, retail, and entertainment. Because if you begin to lose that mix, the downtown begins to lose its desirability, said Housiel. You couldn't have an efficiency or a condo or an apartment in the back of something on the ground floor. That would not be permitted in this code, he added. After hearing Housiel's presentation, downtown property owner Pam Eaton said she backs subdividing the Central Business District. I think by taking the B3 district, which was so large, and dividing it up into three districts, it really is going to open up a lot of opportunities for the warehouse district, she said. Tightening up the immediate downtown district to provide more retail, restaurants, sidewalk cafes, and gift shop businesses, I see as a very positive move. Tim Tilton, who, with his wife Vicky, renovated Monroe Center at 200 West Monroe Street, and Lua Travis, owner of the Common Grounds Grocery at 516 North Main Street, both said they want more information. I hope they are wanting to make the downtown more inviting and feel safer, said Travis. I hope that they are going to keep the business's needs in mind. Parking is a huge issue in downtown, so I hope that will be readily available. The last major revision of the zoning code was completed in 2006. The proposed update is intended to address deficiencies and make it more user-friendly, said Bloomington Community Development Director Bob Mart. The hundreds of suggested changes also include consolidating some commercial districts to eliminate unnecessary duplication. They also call for easing some restrictions on beekeeping and raising chickens in residential areas to support a comprehensive plan goal of encouraging local food production. Here's a story entitled, Glen Students Walk the Walk. Area kids commute to school by foot, bike, as part of national event. By Lenore Sabota. Normal. On a typical day, about a fourth of the roughly 200 students at Glen Elementary School get there by walking or riding a bike, says their principal, Carrie Oester. But Wednesday wasn't a typical day. It was National Walk to School Day, and once again, Glen School was among those taking part. A steady stream of youngsters entered the grounds on foot or wheels, despite dark clouds that threatened to dampen the occasion. For some, such as 5-year-old Brady Cadavar, it was nothing new. The kindergartner rides his bike to school with his mom, Bethany Cadavar, almost every day, even though they live about 3 miles away. She said they take even longer rides on Constitution Trail. In some cases, parents drove their children part of the way, then let them out of the car to walk the remaining few blocks. 8-year-old Madison Bauer, a third grader, was engrossed in her Nancy Drew mystery book, reading as she walked with her 6-year-old sister Hannah, a first grader. Dan Steider rode his bike with his 11-year-old son Robert, a fifth grader. It was a change of pace from the days when he was his son's age. I lived on a farm, said Steider. I was a busser. Cyclists weren't the only students rolling to school. Fifth grader Thomas Eggenhouse, 10, arrived on inline skates while wearing a shirt with the emblem of the Chicago Blackhawks hockey team. As he put his skates in his backpack and changed into regular shoes, Thomas expressed confidence that the Blackhawks would reach the playoffs this season. For crossing guard Gail Thomas, walk to school day meant he was busier than usual at the corner of Fell and Glen Avenues. But he likes the children he sees each day and the dogs people walk past his post. It gets me out of the house, he said. More than 5,000 schools nationwide registered for the national event, including more than 200 in Illinois. In addition to Glen, they included Grove Elementary and Parkside Elementary Schools in Unit 5, Oakland School in District 87, and Metcalf School in Illinois State University Lab School. The event is sponsored by the National Center for Safe Routes to School. The goal is to encourage more students to walk or bike to school beyond just one day by providing safe ways to do so. Gladys Masters, a crossing guard supervisor, said, "The kids are good, but motorists need to pay better attention in school zones." Esther, who is in her first year as principal, said, "Glenn, being a neighborhood school, provides many opportunities for children to walk or bike to school. Both are good exercise," she said, "and having a bike teaches them the responsibility of owning a bike and learning the rules of the road." And, Esther said, by walking together to or from school, parents can bond with their children. Christina Gathright laughed that walking with her children, Dylan, 7, and Avery, 6, gives them a chance at the end of the day to complain about walking home. And here's another school story headlined, "Unit 5 Superintendent Warns of Illinois Teacher Shortage," by Lenore Sabota. Normal. Superintendent Mark Daniel warned Wednesday that action must be taken to address a looming teacher shortage that, in many ways, is already here. Speaking during comments at the McLean County Unit 5 School Board meeting, Daniel said the Normal-based district is fortunate in that it has already taken steps in that direction, such as increasing the starting pay for teachers. But he told the board, "We are truly in a teacher shortage. This is real." He cited statistics reported at a recent conference of the Large Unit District Association, showing that the number of educator certification licensure tests administered has dropped from 51,415 in 2012-13 to 13,535 in 2016-17, a 74% decrease. Speaking after the meeting, Daniel said Unit 5 is in better shape than many districts, with only one or two current teacher openings out of about 980 teachers. But days with full staffing like that could become fewer and fewer if we don't do something proactive, he said. It's something that must be tackled on a statewide basis and includes changing perceptions and images of the teaching profession so parents will encourage their children to pursue teaching careers, he said. It also means doing more to grow your own by giving high school students exposure to teaching experiences, Daniel added. He cited as an example the way some high school seniors help small groups in music programs. Another step would be to line up courses, as is being done with computer science, through an agreement between Unit 5 and Heartland Community College, allowing students to work toward a teaching degree while still in high school, he said. We need to jumpstart and make it more affordable for kids, he said. In other business at the meeting, the board approved a change in the way bids are sought for diesel and gasoline to provide greater flexibility and allow administrators to respond more quickly to dips in the market. The board also was introduced to the new principal at Fairview Elementary School, Gina Tenuta. A graduate of Elmhurst College, Tenuta has been in Unit 5 for 8 years. Most recently, she was associate principal and athletic director at Evans Junior High School. The next story is entitled, Report: Most Defendants Succeed on Pretrial Release, by Edith Brady Lunny. Bloomington. The majority of defendants screened for release from custody before trial did not commit a new offense or fail to appear in court while their cases were pending, according to a study reviewed Wednesday by the McLean County Criminal Justice Coordinating Council. The data, compiled by the Stevenson Center for Community and Economic Development at Illinois State University, examined 3,488 public safety assessments for defendants facing charges in 2016 and 2017, McLean County. About 90% of those screened using a risk-based assessment tool succeeded on pretrial release, according to the report. The assessment scores a defendant's risk for release based on 9 factors that are included in a report provided to the judge, who determines the terms of release. McLean is one of 3 Illinois counties that has used the assessment since January 2016 under a pilot program with the Illinois Administrative Office of Courts. The data show that defendants who scored highest on the risk scale have the greater risk of failure on pretrial release, said McLean County Pretrial Coordinator Sargil Rizvi. 55% of the 3,488 defendants were released, while 38% were detained on substantial bonds set by judges based on information in the assessments. The remaining 7% were released on specific pretrial conditions ranging from low-level monitoring to high-level supervision by court services. The Stevenson Center also updated the CJCC on usage of the county jail for various levels of offenders. The county's efforts to use jail resources primarily for housing those who are the highest risk to public safety is paying off, according to Frank Beck, director of the Stevenson Center. The jail recorded 3,087 bed days, a measure of inmates' overnight stays in the jail, for those charged with misdemeanors in the 12 months ending with September 2018, its lowest level since 2002, said Beck. "You have busted the curve," Beck told the CJCC. The number of bed days for low-level offenders housed at the jail peaked in 2008 with 10,207, according to the data. An initiative undertaken in 2009 to reduce the jail population and the costs for housing inmates outside the county has been successful, said the ISU researcher. The CJCC is a consortium of community members, attorneys, and criminal justice officials. The group encourages collaboration between criminal justice agencies and works to address issues such as recidivism, public safety, and a fair and efficient justice system. And there are a couple of items in today's Daily Digest. The first one is entitled, Friday Concert Moves. Bloomington. Illinois Wesleyan University's Wind Ensemble will present a concert at 7:30 p.m. Friday in Presser Hall's Westbrook Auditorium. The concert is free and open to the public. The concert originally was planned for Ewing Manor Cultural Center, but moved because of inclement weather. And another item is entitled, ISU Students to Discuss Russia Trip. Normal. Illinois State University students who recently returned from a study abroad trip to Vladimir, Russia, will present a free program about the trip October 18th in room 260 at McCormick Hall. The students spent much of their time at Vladimir State University while earning 3 hours of course credit. The trip also included cultural tours of Moscow, Vladimir, Suzdal, and surrounding villages in the Golden Ring. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Pantograph for October 11th. Please stay tuned.